lunch first. While I do, I can tackle the least fun item on today's agenda, sending a message home. The idea makes me swallow hard. A message means a reply. Coward. What if I've done something irreversible and lost my family forever? I thought this as I booked my plane tickets and made my reservation at Swallowtail, and the voice in my head insisted, "You have no choice. You have to get away from them." Having done what I've done, I have no right to miss Patrick, Jess, and Ollie, and no right to feel guilty. That's just a way of kidding myself that I'm a better person than I am. And I have a duty to make contact now, whether I want to or not. I leave Glorita's and follow a sign to reception. Nothing looks familiar. I pass a fenced-off yard that's clearly the resort's club car depot. Peering through the slats of a white-painted fence that's meant to block the area from guests' view, I see a group of men and hear them talking and laughing, the drivers waiting to be summoned to transport those who would rather not walk. Am I lost? Should I ask one of them to drive me? The resort map in my bag proves useless, or rather I'm useless at interpreting it. But I want to walk even if I end up taking a longer route, so I pick a random direction and keep going. Reception ought to be over here somewhere. I cheer quietly to myself when my navigational instincts are proved right. There it is, the main hotel building semicircle facade. Rihanna waves frantically as I walk into the red marble lobby, apparently made ecstatic by my arrival. Her fingernails have changed colour overnight, from Eau de Nile green to pale lilac. I hope she's not about to leap out from behind the desk and hug me. Thankfully, she's dealing with another guest, so I have some degree of protection. An elderly woman is busy giving her a hard time. No free upgrade to a casita for you, angry old lady.
Are you listening to me, Rihanna? Well, then, don't look over there. I'm right in front of you.
I'm sorry, Mrs. McNair. I was right, and now I've been proved right. I want to know what you're going to do about it.
The woman must be in her 80s. She's wearing a blue shirt, maroon corduroy trousers, brown sandals over tights the colour of burned toffee, and a hat that's nothing more than a white visor attached to a strap that goes around her head, with a buckle fastening at the back. She's white, at least in theory, with hair dyed the exact colour of an aubergine, and a tan the same shade and texture as my brown Laura Ashley sofa at home. I must buy some sunscreen, SPF 50. There's no way they won't sell it here. Opposite the reception desk is a shop. Through its open door I can see woven rugs, turquoise and reddish-brown earthenware pots, silver jewellery featuring bright gemstones, wooden-painted flutes, inflatable floating things for children to use in the pool. Sun protection screen must be in there somewhere. The strident old woman's neck and arms are lean and sinewy. They look as if more than the usual number of muscles have been stuffed into them. As she berates Rihanna, gesturing wildly, the muscles twist and ripple beneath the chapped, creased surface of her skin. She needs at least a bottle of moisturizer rubbed into her. Maybe that's why she's come to Swallowtail. There might be a signature massage at the spa that offers de-leatherization.
Mrs. McNair, Rihanna tries again. No one believed me, the old woman throws up her arms. Least of all you. I said it was definitely her, definitely Melody. Did anyone listen? No, no one ever does. You all think I'm Looney Tunes. I absolutely do not think that, ma'am. Yeah, you do. I don't care. I know what I see, and I know what's true. And last night I saw her running. Melody, running. Long dark hair flying out behind her. How come she can run all of a sudden? Can my cousin Isaac run? Let me tell you, he can't even walk.
Your cousin Isaac?
The confusion on Rihanna's face suggests that Mrs. McNair has introduced a new character. Melody is the subject of the conversation, whoever she is. What does cousin Isaac have to do with it?
So, now that we know for sure, are you going to call the police? Mrs. McNair demands. Tell him I saw Melody running away in the middle of the night. Tell him she had that creature with her. She was with her boyfriend. You don't think he's her boyfriend? How do you know? He could be anyone.
Are you going to call the police? I've been right every time. Every single time.
Every time? Do you mean like last year? Is that what you mean? Rihanna speaks to her gently. I sense that she's choosing each word with great care.
Yes, Mrs. McNair sounds unsure now. Then she makes up her mind.
Yes, last year and the year before and the other years. All the times I've seen her.
But, Mrs. McNair, you see a different child every time, says Rihanna patiently. They can't all be Melody, can they?
They are!
Do you remember the year you said a boy was Melody? I quite like the name, Melody Burrows. For a girl, obviously. Mrs. McNair might believe in calling boys Melody, but I don't. That kind of thing may work in spiritual Arizona, but it wouldn't go down well in Hertfordshire.
I don't care, Mrs. McNair snaps at Rihanna. People can alter their appearances. There's no doubt in my mind I saw her with that creature, which means I have proof now. So, I'm going to do something about it.
It sounds as if there might be a tragic story of some sort associated with the old lady's delusion. If I wait to speak to Rihanna, I'm bound to end up hearing all about it, and I don't want to. I can't listen to any stories about bad things happening to children. I sigh and look around for someone else to ask about the business centre. The shop, whoever's in charge there will know, and I can buy some sunscreen. As I walk away from reception, I hear Mrs. McNair say,
"So are you gonna call the police? Tell me if you're not, and I'll call 'em myself. I'll tell 'em I saw Melody last night. No doubt about it."
The woman behind the counter in the shop, instead of directing me to the business centre, rushes off into a back room with a promise to find somebody called Mason. The way she says his name gives the impression that if she were only able to produce him, he would solve all my problems, and possibly those of the world at large, if he had any time left over. I wait to be disappointed, and am pleasantly surprised when she returns with a tall, fair, bespectacled young man who hands me an iPad mini in a red leather case, its front embossed with Swallowtail's logo, and tells me I can keep it for the duration of my stay.
"You're all hooked up already. Full and fast internet access whenever you want it. No need to put in any codes. Last name, room number."
Like the girl on the terrace at lunch, Mason looks as if he could be anything from 16 to 25.
"Also," he says, "it'll give you directions for getting around the resort. If you," he holds out his hand and I pass the iPad back to him, "if you go here, see, you can put in an address anywhere at Swallowtail and it'll tell you which way to walk. If you want to switch off spoken directions, you press here. Then you'll just get the on-screen directions. There's no need to walk. You can always send for a club car wherever you are, and all-in resort transportation is entirely free of charge. But some of our guests do like to walk, for the exercise or to see the beautiful scenery."
"Yeah, that's me," I tell him. "So if I type in pool, it'll take me to the pool. That's where I want to go next."
"Oh, no need to type in anything at all."
Mason sounds shocked, as if I've suggested I might try to climb to the top of Camelback Mountain in my flip-flops.
"Wherever you want to go in the resort, click here and you'll get the drop-down menu, see? All the swimming pools are listed."
"Ah, right.
Yes, let me do it for you this first time. Which pool is it you want? The spa pool is adults only, which means no under-16s. Or you could go to the lap pool or the pond. That's our eco pool with a completely natural cleaning system. No chemicals added. Or the family pool."
Oh,
"Have you tried out any of our pools so far?" Mason asks, inspecting me closely.
"No, not yet. I arrived late last night, and I've mostly been asleep since then."
"Good to know," he says.
I scour his face for an indication that he's being sarcastic, but he seems sincere.
"In that case, I'm going to recommend you start at the family pool. It's the biggest one with the best views, and there's a fantastic poolside bar and restaurant if you find yourself in need of refreshments. If I say so myself, there are no better cocktails to be had in all of America."
He has to be joking. Weirdly, he doesn't seem to be.
"There's an at-seat service, so no need to get up if you're relaxing. Just press the button on the side of your lounge chair and a waiter will come take your order." The pool is L-shaped, and both bars of the L are 80 feet long. I nod. I've seen the photo on the website. I'm keen to see the real thing, if only Mason would stop describing it to me. There's also a hot tub with a cold plunge pool next to it. Drinks can be served to the hot tub. Again, you just press a button. Towels are provided free of charge. Does all of that sound good? I'm tempted to roll my eyes and say tersely, "It'll do, I suppose." "Wonderful, great," I say instead. "The family pool it is." "And you want to walk there?" "Yes." "Do you want the voice on or off?" "Voice? For your directions?" Mason clarifies. "Oh, right. Off, please." "Okay, here you go." He hands me the iPad mini with a smile and says, "You have yourself a wonderful day, ma'am." The iPad tells me to walk back through the lobby on my way out of the main building. It doesn't trust me to work out even that obvious first stage for myself. There's no sign of Rihanna or Mrs. McNair at reception. I can imagine how glad at least one of them was when that conversation finally ended, unless they moved it elsewhere, out of the way of impressionable guests. I walk for about 10 minutes, turning whenever I'm told to turn, and finally arrive at the shimmering turquoise pool that's so much more stunning in reality than it looked in the pictures. There are a few people in the water and many more sitting on lounge chairs around it, most of them under white parasols with blue, green or pink drinks beside them on wooden tables. Every glass I can see is a different shape. There are at least 53 lounge chairs for me to choose from. Near the bar seems a good idea. I can't drink alcohol, but a place like this must have a mocktail menu, which is a tempting enough prospect. I can live without booze for child number 3's sake, but no doctor has ever said pregnant women must also be deprived of glacé cherries and colourful paper umbrellas, my second and third favourite cocktail ingredients. The mother and daughter from the terrace at Glorita's are sitting as close to the bar as it's possible to sit, which means I'm going to have to sit a bit farther away. With all the lounge chairs that are available, I need to leave a minimum of 4 empty ones between us if I don't want to risk encroaching on their space. To be on the safe side, I leave 5 and move toward the 6th. From the corner of my eye, I see something coming toward me. It looks like a pile of white toweling with legs. The legs are wearing white shorts and there are white tennis shoes on the feet. A man's voice says, "Ma'am, may I give you a towel, a robe and slippers?" "Oh, thank you." I wait while he lays it all out neatly on my chair, though I'd give him full marks for effort. I don't like his arrangement, and will move it all once he's gone. "And may I put up the parasol for you? Or would you rather be in the sun?" "No, thanks. I mean, yes, please, the parasol up would be great. Thanks." His work done, he tells me to have a super great day. As he strolls away, I mutter under my breath, "Don't tell me what kind of day to have." Maybe I should have picked a resort in a different country, where everyone's a bit grumpier, somewhere cold and underprivileged. As promised, there's a button on the side of my lounge chair with a picture on it of a waiter holding a tray. Much as I'd like a drink, I can't face pressing it. I've had enough conversations for today. I spot a cold water and ice machine on the other side of the pool, with a stack of plastic cups next to it. That's one problem solved. What's the other machine? The white one the size of a large suitcase with a nozzle on the side. It turns out to be a sun cream dispenser, which reminds me that I forgot to buy any in the shop. I've never seen that before. SPF 30. On tap. Then again, I normally go on holiday to rural Wales or Scotland, to hotels that offer to lend you Wellington boots and umbrellas. I rub more cream into my skin than I would normally. The Arizona sun seems a bit more serious than anything I've encountered before. On my way back to my chair with a glass of water, I prepare to look away in order to avoid eye contact with the mother and daughter. I feel better when I see that they're as committed as I am to mutual non-acknowledgement. Both are immersed in their books. The mother's is called Jane Doe January. The daughter is reading The Waves by Virginia Woolf. Older than she looks, definitely. Either that or she's unusually highbrow for her age. If Jess were here, she'd be reading something by or about a Kardashian. I sit down, open the iPad, and wonder how to email Patrick when the only email account I have is the one he and I share. If we need to contact each other when we're apart, we always text. Is there any reason why I shouldn't be able to send an email to and from the same account? Probably not. Deciding what I want to say to Patrick is harder than I thought it would be. I love you, I'm sorry, I'm angry, I miss you. I feel as if something I've always believed in has turned out to be a shoddy forgery. I'm definitely not putting that in my email. Dear Patrick, I begin. My phone is out of action at the moment, long story, so if you sent me texts since I left, I haven't seen them. I don't know if, by now, you've worked out why I felt I had to escape for a bit. I don't know if you're angry or hurt or confused. All three, probably. Anyway, I'm truly sorry for whatever problems I've caused for you, Jess, and Ollie. I hope you know that I didn't do this on a whim, and that I wouldn't have done it if I'd felt I had a choice. I'm missing you all like crazy and looking forward to seeing you again. When I get back, I hope we can talk about everything and sort things out. Please, for now, can you just email me and let me know that you and the kids are okay and coping, and that all is fine at home? Lots of love. C. XXX. P.S. I'm writing to the kids separately, but you can show them this too if you want. I read what I've written. It strikes the wrong tone, I think. Calm. Considerate. Too considerate. It mentions Patrick's hurt and anger, but not mine. Because you're leading by example. Your email acknowledges his pain. Now, let's see if his reply acknowledges yours. I can't decide if that's a pathetic excuse. I'm not a representative of the Good Behaviour Exam Board. Why should Patrick take any notice of my feelings when I pretend not to notice them myself? I go back to the message and after all three, probably, I add, I know that I'm angry and hurt. Very. But I'm not at all confused. I know what I want, and I know what I'm going to do. No, that sounds too combative. I change it to, I know I want this baby. I press send and see that I guessed right. A Hotmail address can send messages to itself, no problem at all. Great, that's that done. Next, Jess and Ollie. They both have email accounts, but they never look at them. All their online communication with their friends happens in other places. Snapchat, Instagram. I know nothing about Snapchat, but I have an Instagram account. I set it up because the kids wanted me to see their photos. Ollie's are mostly of his Xbox, computer equipment, and skateboards. Each time Patrick buys him a new monitor or headset, he posts a picture of it, and it gets liked by all the boys in his class at school, at least four of whom are in Ollie's gaming gang, or whatever it's called. It's not called that, Mum, Jess would say. You're such a dinosaur. I know Ollie's friends as Fraser, Richard, Louis, and Barney, but for gaming purposes, they're Illusion Fire, Illusion Sleepwalk, Illusion Stack, and Illusion Shadow. Ollie is Illusion Blaze. Jess loves taking odd angled photos of street scenes and buildings. All my friends just post selfies of their ridiculous pouty faces, she told me, shaking her head in disgust. They look like fish that have been frozen with a stun gun. Unlike Ollie, who likes his friends in an uncomplicated way, Jess has strong views about hers that aren't always complimentary. Petra is wet and boring. Hazel the snide cow, but always disguises her cruel comments as humour, though no one notices this apart from Jess. She calls Jess fat all the time as a joke, even though Jess is skinny, and Hazel is fat. But Jess is kind enough never to point this out. Esther pretends to have life-threatening food allergies, but that's a lie, and her parents hate each other so much, they can't be in the same county. When I see Jess with these girls, they always seem to be having the best time ever. Hugging each other, giggling, listing the flaws of the smelly, sexiest boys with bad breath who read books about elves, and the other girls who aren't in their group, their terrible taste in Netflix dramas, their badly behaved dogs, their gold-digger mothers. I haven't heard any dissent or bitching within Jess's little gang, only complete agreement on every topic, as if the four of them have one mind. I once presented this to Jess as evidence that she might like her friends more than she claims to. She rolled her eyes and said, Mum, I have no choice about who I spend time with. I'm stuck at school all day long with these randoms. I have to fit in, or I'll have no social life. All Jess's Instagram photos, without exception, have been liked by Hazel, Petra, and Esther. I'm sure she has reciprocated. I've been forbidden from liking anything posted by either of my children. Jess tried to be reasonable when she imposed this restriction. "We'd like your photos, Mum, if you ever posted any. But for us, it'd be embarrassing to have you liking our stuff. All our friends would see it." My stomach turns over when I see that neither Jess nor Ollie has posted anything at all on Instagram since I left for Arizona. Why not? Are they too upset? A panicky feeling starts to well up inside me. I take deep breaths to drive it away. "Sod it," I mutter as I decide to break the rule and like Jess's most recently posted picture, a bay window behind iron railings. I add a comment. "Love you very much, darling. See you on Tuesday, the 24th of October. I'm fine. There's nothing to worry about. All my love, Mum. XXXXX. On Ollie's Instagram, I do the same. Like the picture he's posted of a box with El Gato written on it, and add a message that's nearly identical to the one I sent Jess. I hear a boy's voice yell, "Marco!" Looking up, I see that it came from the pool. A girl yells, "Polo!" apparently in response. They're part of a group of five or six who are circling each other in the water. Soon others have joined in and are shouting too. "Marco! Polo! Marco! Polo!" The loudest shouter by far is a girl of about 10 with the thickest braids I've ever seen sticking out from the side of her head. Bright blue bubbles at the top and bottom on both sides, creating a strange braid sausage effect. I hear the girl who's trying to read Virginia Woolf say to her mother, "Can we move to the spa pool? I can't listen to this. It's torture. Why are people such morons? Mother, are you listening to me?" No reply. Then a distracted, "No, I'm not moving. Marco, Polo." It must be a game of some kind, though watching the aimless circling and giggling that's going on in the pool, it's hard to fathom what the rules might be. "Marco! Why can't we move? Polo!" "You don't think the spa pool will have morons?" the mother replies eventually. "Why not? Morons are everywhere." "The spa pool doesn't allow children under 16, so the morons will be older there, is all. They're less likely to scream Marco Polo all day long. This pool has better views and a cocktail bar. The spa's all rainwater and fresh air smoothies. I hate that shit. Don't worry, I have an idea. I need a cocktail first, then I'll deal with those people." "Oh, you'll deal with them?" the daughter laughs. "Right, can't wait to see that. You think you're such a badass, and you're so not." "You'll see," her mother says with quiet confidence. If this woman found herself unexpectedly pregnant and wanted to keep the baby, I bet she'd obliterate all opposition within seconds. I wait, expecting to hear her getting up off her lounge chair and clacking off in her high-heeled sandals in search of a cocktail. Then I realize she'll simply have pressed a button. Sure enough, a few seconds later, I hear footsteps and a man asking what he can bring her. She orders a swallowtail showboat, whatever that is. Her daughter orders Earl Grey tea with lemon. "Marco! Polo! Marco! Polo!" "So, what's your plan?" asks the girl. "Drowning them? Like, why aren't they at school?" "Why aren't you?" "That's easy. Because I have a mother who cares more about her vacation than my education." "I'm going to need your help," says badass Mum. "With what? With them?" "No. No way. Pick a random name." "What?" "Go on. Someone from that book you're reading." "Ugh, Mother, seriously. Quit it. Let's just move to the spa pool when you've had your drink." "Okay, I'll pick Harvey Specter." "Who's that?" "The guy in suits. We get in the pool, get right up close to those bastards, then I yell, 'Harvey,' at the top of my lungs, and you yell, 'Specter.' Then we do it again and again. I guarantee we won't hear another peep out of the Marco Polos." I hear movement, footsteps, and a scratching sound like fingernails on material. Is the daughter about to walk away in disgust, or is the waiter arriving with badass Mum's cocktail? I can't turn and look without risking being drawn into something. Suits. That is so lame. I don't know how you can watch that brain rot shit. Every single episode someone says, just do your goddamn job and win the goddamn case, while the elevator doors slide shut in front of them. I can do it on my own if you're too shy. Yell, Harvey and Specter. Suddenly I hear a different voice much closer say, it was her. Nobody believes me. Never do, never will, but it was her. Oh no, please no. It was Melody, sure as I'm born. I turn. Mrs. McNair has taken a lounge chair that's set a little back from mine and to the right. Quickly, I look away. Too late. Hey, you! She calls out. Pretend you're invisible. Pretend she's invisible. Lady, in front! There's no way out. I turn back to her with a fixed smile. Yes? I don't suppose you'd believe me either. No, I shouldn't tell you. There's something wrong with you. What is it? What's the matter?
I'm fine, I say, keeping my smile firmly in place. Actually, I'm suddenly much too hot, even in the shade.
No, you're in bad shape. I can feel it. There's no connection.
Mrs. McNair points at me, then to her chest, then back to me.
I can't feel a connection to you at all. None.
Could that be because you're a complete stranger? Don't people say that you always think of the perfect comeback when it's too late? Not me. I normally think of it in plenty of time to use it, and I always decide not to. I'm such a wimp.
Sad ass, not badass. I know what it is, the old lady peers at me. It's your energy. It's not right. You have a very hollow energy.
Mrs. Icy Dead Peoples picked her next hapless victim, says badass mum to her daughter.
Mrs. Icy what? My brain plays it back and I realize what she must have said. It's her nickname for Mrs. McNair, evidently. Mrs. Icy Dead People, a reference to the Bruce Willis movie The Sixth Sense. Does that mean, is Melody dead? That would explain why Mrs. McNair expressed surprise at seeing her running. Her cousin Isaac, who can't walk, let alone run, is very likely dead, too. How long have all these people been at Swallowtail? Badass Mum seems to know all about Mrs. McNair and her peculiar ways. I've switched to the daughter's side with Marco and Polo still being shrieked at full volume. It's way past time to relocate to the spa pool. I start to get up.
Wait, says Mrs. McNair. I know what you need. I have a friend in Oak Creek, up Sedona way. She does soul retrieval. She can get you your soul back. It's Native American, the technique she uses. Visualization. She's the best. She's the one you should go see. And give her a testimonial for her website when you're done. You don't have to, only if you want to. But why wouldn't you want to? What harm would it do?
She waves her hand dismissively, as if she's given up on me already.
People used to care. They gave back. No one gives back anymore. You try to help people. She shakes her head. It was her. Melody. It was dark, and I couldn't see the top of her head, but it was her.
Without saying a word in response, I walk away as fast as I can. I hear badass Mum say,
damn, we lost our buffer. Crazy just got closer.
It's only when I'm closing the gate to the pool area that I remember I've left the iPad mini behind. Great, just perfect. How could I be so stupid? Perhaps it has something to do with my hollow energy or lack of soul. That must be it. Shit, shit, shit. Where's the fetch the thing I've forgotten, spare me another encounter with Mrs. McNair button for me to press? I steel myself and walk back to where I was sitting. Mrs. McNair's eyes are closed. She opens them as I approach, looks up at me with a smile and says,
hello, dear.
As if this is the first time we've encountered one another. It's goodbye, actually, I say as I pick up the iPad. Did I just, not hugely, but sort of, a little bit, stick up for myself for the first time in my life, instead of running away? As well as, not instead of. Now I'm running away.
For my 6th birthday, my parents gave me a photo of Emery. It was in a little heart-shaped gold frame. They said they thought I was finally old enough to see her and have my own special picture of her. It was kind of a shock. Until then, I'd only imagined her face. Never seen it. In the photo, Emery was dead. I knew that without asking. She looked dead, and there's no way anyone could have gotten a photo of her lying on flower-patterned material, or any sort of photo of her at all while she was alive. Apart from an ultrasound, I guess. I unwrapped my birthday present before I knew what it was. My mother and father were smiling and had tears in their eyes, so I thought it was going to be something truly great. When I saw what it was, I couldn't speak. I wanted to scream and throw it across the room. But my parents were beaming at me, expecting me to be thrilled. "Isn't your sister just so beautiful?" my mother asked me. "Yes," I said. If I'd given any other answer, she wouldn't have spoken a single word to me for at least 2 weeks. I allowed a few tears to leak out. I could get away with it, I figured, if I made my parents believe I was thinking what they were thinking. "She should be here now," I said, quoting Mom's most overused phrase. "Yes, she should," my mother agreed, also crying. "Well, you have a photo of her now to put on your nightstand. That way you can see her beautiful face every day." I thought I was going to faint. I didn't want to sleep in the same room as a photo of a dead girl, even if she was my sister. But there was nothing I could do about it. It turned out that my parents had dozens of pictures of Emery. As soon as they'd given me my birthday present, there was a big change in household policy. It was as if they'd been holding back all those years, having judged that I was too young to see images of my dead sister. But now that they'd given me one as a gift, there was no need to hide anything. So out they all came. My parents' bedroom, our family room, dining room, den, all were suddenly full of photos of Emery, in gold frames of different sizes. The flowery thing that Emery was lying on in my birthday present picture was in most of the others, but not all of them. There were a few where she was lying on some kind of shimmery silver material that looked as if it could have been a fancy bedspread. At the same time, some pictures of me appeared, propped up against books on shelves in the house, unframed. Not dozens, but 2 or 3. No photos of me had ever been put up on display before. Hardly any had been taken. At the time, I believed my parents must have realized that I might feel left out if I saw my sister on every surface and me on none, and so tried to compensate me by displaying a few dog-eared snaps. I remember thinking, how can they imagine that this will make me feel better? Are they stupid? Do they think I haven't noticed that there are 30 of Emery and only 3 of me? Do they think I can't see that they've spent money on frames for hers and not for mine? I don't think I'd ever have worked out the truth on my own. Yes, I was young and naive at age 6. And I'm less so now. But still, I wouldn't have figured it out because it's too horrible. My mind would never have produced the suspicion that any parent could or would do that. And yet, when the kind smiles told me, it made sense. My parents were not trying to make me feel better. Their aim was the opposite. If they put up some pictures of Emery and none of me, I'd probably have thought nothing of it. There were no photos of my parents up on shelves, we weren't that kind of family. I think I'd have assumed that pictures of Emery were different because she was gone, and we needed to remember her. By putting out photos of me as well, far fewer, and all unframed. My mother and father were trying to send me the message, in case I'd failed to notice, that they loved my dead sister more than me. I don't think the kind smiles understand that every time they call me favorite child, it reminds me of how much I wasn't for my mother and father. It makes me think of all the sad things.
Chapter 3, October 10th, 2017. I'm halfway to the spa building, courtesy of my silent electronic guide, when I hear a gasp behind me. I turn and see Rihanna hurrying toward me across the grass, darting left and right to avoid the water sprinklers. It's the first time I've seen anyone at Swallowtail on the grass. Of the few people I've seen so far who appear willing to use their own legs, the rest have all stuck rigidly to the little streets and paved pathways. The grass is so smooth and radiant all over the resort, a stunning green carpet laid out like landscape art. I assumed there was an unwritten rule that no one was allowed to sully it with their shoes, but maybe that doesn't apply to resort staff. "Mrs. Burrows!" Rihanna catches me up and stands by my side, panting. "How are you today? Did you sleep well? Do you love your casita? Pretty great view, huh?" "I'm fine, thank you. I set brilliantly and the casita is out of this world. Really fantastic. Thanks so much for the upgrade." "You're so welcome, and I'm so sorry about before. I could see you waiting to talk to me, but that particular guest is a little demanding, as you probably saw. Anyway, I hope you reached out to another member of the Swallowtail team and got the help you needed." "Yes, I did. Thanks. Awesome. And now, let me guess, you're on your way to our beautiful spa." I nod. "In that case, I'm gonna recommend my favorite treatment. It is sincerely divine. Like, from heaven. I'm telling you, hand on heart, you have to try it while you're here. The cactus needle full body massage." Rihanna laughs at my expression. "Don't let the name put you off. Also great is the sound bath body immersion." "I can see I'll be spoiled for choice," I say cheerily. It sounds fake to me, but it seems to be the easiest way to talk to a happy American. Anything less upbeat and Rihanna might frown and ask if I'm planning to kill myself later tonight. "Can I just ask?" I begin tentatively. "Yes, of course. How can I help you?" "The lady at reception before, is she okay?"
"Mrs. McNair?"
"Sure," Rihanna waves her hand, a brushing aside gesture. "She's fine, buzz at heart. Comes every year. One of our more, imaginative guests, that's for sure. She sat next to me by the pool a few minutes ago and said a few strange things. Well, I hope she didn't disturb you too much. But really, she's nothing to worry about. She wouldn't hurt a fly. This girl she keeps talking about. Melody? I hope that's all I need to say. Completing my question would make me sound too nosy. What's the story there?"
"I know," says Rihanna. "She's a little obsessed."
"Is Melody dead?" Her eyes widen in surprise. She tilts her head and shakes her index finger in the air.
"You are one smart lady, Mrs. Burrows. Yes, I'm afraid poor little Melody passed on years ago."
"Doesn't stop Mrs. McNair from seeing her everywhere." "She says it's just here, but I don't believe that personally. I think she sees Melodies everywhere she goes. She spends 2 weeks of every year at Swallowtail, and each time within hours of arriving, she's fixated on some girl she thinks is Melody. Once, it was even a boy. It's sad for her, you know? Not much else in her life, I guess. Oh, excuse me."
Rihanna's looking past me over my right shoulder. I turn and see two men walking toward us. One is dark-skinned, short and stocky, with black curly hair. The other's tall, thin and fair. They're both wearing suits, white shirts and ties. Rihanna's lost interest in me. She tells me to have a great day, as if she's barely aware of who she's talking to and what she's saying, and runs toward the men. Odd. A little rude, too. Still, at least now I don't have to hear a tragic story about Mrs. McNair's dead child or grandchild. I'm about to set off for the spa when I hear the word
detective. A man said it. Was it one of the men talking to Rihanna? It must have been. There's no one else around, and the voice sounded as if it came from that direction. I look back and see the tall blonde slipping something into his pocket. What was it? I just missed it. Was it a detective's badge? His police ID? I suppose it's possible, likely even, that I'm leaping to all the wrong conclusions. Maybe, he said, defective. My orange juice this morning was quite defective. It tasted of bananas, not oranges. But I heard Mrs. McNair say she'd call the police herself if no one else would. That must be what's happened. Rihanna ran toward them as if she was expecting them, though. I saw it with my own eyes, so she must have known they were coming. Why wouldn't she call them and tell them not to bother, to ignore crazy Mrs. McNair? Is this a regular part of Mrs. McNair's annual stay at Swallowtail? Is there so little crime in Arizona that detectives are willing to take a day off from real work once a year to humour an old lady? Highly unlikely. Far more plausible is that either I heard wrong and no one said detective, or else the police are here about something quite different. Since there's no way of solving the mystery for the time being, I decide I might as well go and study the spa's treatment menu. I'm pretty sure I want to avoid cactus needles, but there must be a relaxing aromatherapy massage for pregnant people. I probably won't ask my masseur if she knows anything about Mrs. McNair and Melody, or why there are two detectives at the resort. Almost definitely not. Nothing has happened, I tell myself firmly. Nothing. There is no mystery. Then why did Rihanna look anxious when she saw the two men? Why did she run to them, to stop them from getting any closer to where I was standing? The answer must be for a reason. I don't know the reason, but that doesn't mean it doesn't exist. Why should I know anything? I've been here less than 24 hours. A jewelry theft from a casita, a smashed car window. It could be any one of a thousand things. Rihanna would want to conceal any and all problems from me because I'm a guest. Stands to reason. There's nothing to worry about. Nothing I didn't bring with me, anyway. I need to get a grip before I end up as loopy as Mrs. McNair. The spa proves almost impossible to find, even with the help of a bossy iPad. The trouble is the resort junctions. There are places where turn left might mean taking any one of three paths, all of which could be said to be on the left, depending on your definition. After a series of wrong turns and doublings back, I finally arrive. The building that houses the spa is much more attractive than the main hotel. It's a large rectangle with curved edges made of dark, glossy metal of a deep greenish-grey colour. Stripes of mirror reflecting the green of the trees all around alternate with long, thin windows that reveal other trees inside the building bordering a dark, shimmering rectangle with a moving surface. It takes me a few seconds to work out what this is. A pool with black, glittering tiles. Wow. Inside, this spa is equally stunning. Three members of staff stand behind the reception desk, all wearing the same tunic and trousers uniform. White with a pale green Swallowtail logo. I was hoping to explore on my own, but I don't have the energy to insist on it, so I let a young woman called Sudita show me around. We start off in the ladies' changing rooms, where there are robes, slippers, towels, lotions, hair products. Sudita tries to tell me about each item, but I'm distracted by the large screen embedded in the wall. An advertisement for a medicine called Dalbranol is on, just loud enough for me to hear. The ad seems to go on forever. Sujita points out what look like two solid silver cylinders in the corner, both with nozzles. One is for boiling water, the other for warm water. Around these, other things are laid out so beautifully. It could almost be a religious shrine. Elaborately patterned china cups and saucers, dozens of different kinds of tea bags in tiny pastel-coloured paper envelopes, raisins, dried apricots, and probably other things too. But by now, I'm too fascinated by the TV to pay attention to what Sujita's showing me. The Dalbranol advert has ended, and the next one, for something called Glucoflush, is behaving in exactly the same bizarre way, listing the negative side effects of the product in the loud, pedantic tone of a worst-case-scenario-obsessed neurotic. Glucoflush may cause cataract arrest, leukemia, athlete's foot, blindness, or halitosis. Do not take Glucoflush if you are pregnant, asthmatic, diabetic, a talented violin player, or a tennis fan. Side effects include loss of teeth, hair, sense of humor, car keys, and virginity. Ask your doctor before taking Glucoflush if you don't want to die, shrink, turn to green slime, swell up like a balloon, lose all your friends and family, or vomit forever. I'm exaggerating, but only slightly. I wait for the doom-mongering voice to perk up at the end and say, "Apart from that, it's a really great product." But no, like the advert before it, this one offers no happy ending. How on earth do Americans ever manage to buy anything if this is the way their advertising works? I wonder if it's only medical stuff that needs to be advertised in this way, or if it works the same way for movies and cars. The new Jaguar, blah, blah, may cause hideous death involving fires and twisted metal. Do not drive the Jaguar, blah, blah, if you like having feet, ears, or a small intestine. Sorry, I say, suddenly aware that I haven't been listening at all. What did you ask me?
You'll need to take off your shoes for the rest of the tour and put on your spa slippers, says Sujata.
I leave my flip-flops in a locker. For the 4-digit code I need to lock it, I choose my baby's American due date, American only in the sense that they put the month before the day.
Ready? Asks Sujata.
We leave the perplexing TV behind and go through to the spa proper. The smell is the first thing I notice. It's sort of watery, but green leaves are also involved, and some kind of rich spice. It's gorgeous. I'd wear it as a perfume. To say that the facilities are extensive is a ludicrous understatement. There's an orange steam room, a rose steam room, 2 hammams, 3 saunas ranging from very hot to only a little bit hot, a bar and cafe area, 20 treatment rooms, the glittery black indoor pool, a beautiful blue outdoor pool with lounge chairs and parasols around it, a hot tub with bubbles and one without, a freezing cold square plunge pool, a warm hydrotherapy pool, and perhaps my favourite thing of all, a sort of network of outdoor jacuzzis.
We call it Hot Tub Circle, says Sujata. You access it through the hydrotherapy pool, so no need to get out of the water and lose any heat. Just go on through. See the hanging beads in the corner? Walk through there and you'll find yourself outside, still in the water up to roughly your waist. Go straight ahead for 6 feet or so, and you'll find yourself at the entrance to the circle. There's a current that'll pull you all the way round. Imagine the shape of a donut. You can swim if you like, with help from the current, or just float and let it carry you around. As you go, you'll see that off the circle, to the left and right, there are jacuzzi areas of varying sizes. Some are ideal for one person alone, others can seat 4 or 5. There's a big one that fits 12. In the jacuzzi areas, there's no current, so that's where you can stop for a rest if you want, for as long as you need. No 2 jacuzzis are the same. They all have jets in different places, so you can try a few. See which you like best. Some have lots of high-pressure jets for a real intense full-body massage. Others are much milder, like sitting in a bubble bath with a very faint movement to the bubbles. Anyway, you be sure to try them all. I nod. This is unbelievable. I've been for the odd spa day in the UK, a Christmas present from Patrick, a hen weekend, but I've never seen anything like this before. Oh, and before I let you go and relax, I must show you my favourite thing of all, the Crystal Grotto.
Sushta leads me along a tree-lined, glass-sided corridor. We come to a rough, textured, semicircle wall sticking out of a smooth, flat one. In the sticking-out part, there's an open arch-topped doorway. I look inside and see what looks like a cave with a dark red floor. Sujata slips off her white slippers and walks in. I do the same. We're in a perfectly round room with a dome-shaped top. There are soft yellow wall lights at regular intervals, and about 2 dozen large mauve and pink crystals in metal brackets, also attached to the walls. I don't know what I'm standing on, some kind of dark red powdery stuff. It's warm, as if heated from below. On the ground are more pink and mauve crystals, smaller ones in circles, freestanding heaps, metal bowls. There's a stone bench running all the way around the circular wall for people who want to sit down. Close to the entrance to the grotto, there's a tall silver table, like a lectern but with a flat top. on which sits a large dimpled silver pot and, next to it, a notepad and a few pencils. "The crystal grotto is for leaving your worries behind," says Sujata. "It's amazing. It really works. Here's what you do. Tear off a sheet of paper from the pad and write down something you're worried about. Anything that's been preying on your mind. Maybe a grudge you've been hanging on to or some old pain or trauma. Then sit in the grotto, holding the paper in your hand. Sit with your eyes closed and breathe deeply, reflecting on whatever it is you've written down. After about 10 minutes, or however long feels right to you, stand up and say, 'I choose not to carry this worry or pain into my future,' and put the piece of paper in the silver bowl before you leave. I guarantee that worry will be gone, and it won't ever come back." "Mm-hmm," I say diplomatically. "I like this little round room. I can imagine lying down on whatever this powdery stuff is and having a long, deep sleep. But you'd have to be an idiot to write down details of your personal problems and leave them in a pot for other guests to read." After the crystal grotto, Sujata leaves me to my own devices. I have a quick look around the spa shop, healing crystals, dream catchers, soap, body lotion, books about the sacred properties and ancient wisdom of Camelback Mountain, before heading for the outdoor pool. Damn, badass mum and highbrow daughter are here, reading their books on lounge chairs. I wonder if that means the attempt to silence the Marco Polo shouters was unsuccessful. I studiously avoid catching their eye, and they reciprocate. Good. I feared they might be tempted to try and engage me in a bitching session about poor old Mrs. McNair, but they evidently want nothing to do with me, which is a relief. If they keep ignoring me like this, I'll soon be able to see them around the resort and not think, "Oh shit, I hope they don't think I'm following them around." The layout here is much more regular and symmetrical than at the family pool, a rectangle of royal blue, somehow more satisfying to look at than the traditional turquoise, in a white-walled courtyard with one potted tree in each corner and four rows of lounge chairs parallel both to the walls and to the four sides of the pool. Little tables next to the chairs hold folded maps of the spa and piles of menus, food, drinks, spa treatments that include everything from a chakra realignment revitalizer to an aromatherapy aura-enhancing foot massage. A young white woman wearing a name badge that says Kimbali appears with towels for me and takes my order of a virgin colada. Kimbali. Is that a misspelling of Kimberly, I wonder, and by whom? The spa badge maker or the girl's parents? Was she conceived in Bali, and is her mother called Kim, maybe? There's no excuse. With one hand on my stomach, I whisper, "I swear I will not give you a stupid name." I'm about to lie back on my lounge chair and close my eyes when a man walks out of the spa building, scans the terrace as if looking for someone, runs his fingers through his hair as if he knows people are watching, then goes back inside. It's the taller of the two men I saw Rihanna talking to, the good-looking blonde one, made considerably less attractive by his air of seeming pleased with himself for no apparent reason. One of the detectives. Why is he here? Who was he looking for? Mrs. McNair? Without stopping to ask myself what on earth I think I'm doing, I get up and walk into the spa building in pursuit. It takes me a while to find him. I can't move fast on these smooth-tiled floors in my white slippers, but eventually I see him ahead of me, talking to a white-uniformed spa employee, the only male one I've seen so far. He lowers his voice when he sees me approaching, but not before I hear him say, "See, Melody." That name again. I'm going to have to walk past the two men in order to look natural. I slow my pace, hoping to hear some of their conversation, but it's no use. The detective spotted me straight away and is saying things he's decided it's okay for me to hear. "Thanks for your help." And, "Worth a try, however poor the odds." I smile as innocently as I can as I pass them. They stand shoulder to shoulder, smiling back. Poor odds of what? Who the hell is this Melody person? A while ago, I decided she must be someone Mrs. McNair had lost. But if there's a detective involved, that's what he is. I no longer doubt it. I don't know how I got here, but I'm at the entrance of the crystal grotto again. There's no one in there, so I walk in, sit down, and try to think. Was there something criminal about Melody's death? Was she murdered? Either she's dead or she's not. Rihanna said with total certainty that she was. So why would the police follow up on a possible sighting, especially when the woman claiming to have seen her has made the same claim every year about a different child each time? Maybe if I write my questions on a piece of paper and put them in the silver pot, some answers will pop out.
Yeah, right.
I stand up, walk over to the pot, and stick my hand in to see if there's anything inside. The neck is only just wide enough. It's almost empty, but not quite. My fingers touch a few folded papers. No, Kara, bad and wrong. Plus, someone could turn up at any moment and catch you. I start arguing with my conscience about the practicalities, not the ethics. It'll only take a few seconds to pull them out. Once they're in my hand and I'm sitting back on the bench, no one who came in would know I got them from the pot. They'd assume they were mine. I'm going to risk it. For a few minutes, I forget all about the detectives, Mrs. McNair and Melody, as I read what swallowtail guests have chosen to write and put in the silver pot. There are 6 folded bits of paper in total. One says simply, loan/debt. Another says, I have to give a speech to more than 100 people next week and I'm terrified, hate public speaking. The third says, be a better husband, be a better dad. I shake my head and tut. Sujata said nothing about putting resolutions in the silver pot. It's supposed to be anxiety, grudges, trauma and pain. Whoever he is, the inadequate husband and father, has bent the grotto rules. The fourth one is more interesting, and in a child's writing. Do Mum and Dad love me? Do they love Emery more? Oh dear, my family isn't the only one with problems, clearly. I blink at the endless, dull detail of the next paper I unfold. It says, Vanessa told me I would not be needed on 23rd. She said there would be no role for me, and so she was sorry, but I would have to find another opportunity. So I arranged to do something that day, and now I have commitments, and suddenly she decides she does want me involved after all, because she's realised it won't work without my input. But she's too chicken shit to tell me face to face, so she had Paul do her dirty work and asked me on her behalf. And now I have to either say yes, and she gets away with treating me that way, and I have to let other people down, or I say no and miss out on an opportunity I wanted that'd be really beneficial. How tedious. Whatever's happening on the 23rd, I'm sure it's something I'd hate to have to take part in. I unfold the 6th and last piece of paper, hoping for something more entertaining, and see my own name. I make an undignified noise and drop the paper. It falls to the floor. No. Must be a mistake. My heart has started to pound hard. That can't be what I saw. I must have imagined it. People imagine all kinds of things, like the time I had the most vivid memory of putting Ollie's lunchbox in his school bag, and the secretary phoned and said Ollie had no lunch and could I bring it in, and when I looked, it was still in the fridge. I sit off the bench and sink down to my knees on the red powder floor. Hardly daring to look, I force myself to reach for the paper again. It was no hallucination. The words I read are still there. In forward-slanting handwriting, someone has written, Kara Burrows, is she safe? Okay, okay, I say to myself out loud in my regular voice and at a normal volume. Just because some freak has written about me in the Crystal Grotto, that doesn't mean I need to panic. I feel an urgent need to take control of the situation. Grabbing a pencil from the table, I write beneath the slanty handwriting, I don't feel particularly safe after reading this. Who are you and what the hell do you mean? Yours, Kara Burrows. I refold all 6 papers and put them back in the pot before leaving. Once outside the grotto, I inhale deeply as if I've been underground, deprived of air. I'm never going back in there. Not even walking past the entrance. Never again. I'm going back every hour on the hour to see what else people have written about me. One of those statements will probably turn out to be true. I just don't know which one yet. I start marching toward reception, then stop when I figure out that there's no way I can report what I've seen. I had no business snooping in the pot. It would be too humiliating to admit that I did. I could say I found the piece of paper on the floor, I suppose, but what good would it do? The spa staff would have no way of knowing who wrote it. Even if they did, there's not much they could do. People are allowed to write what they want in the grotto, and there's nothing menacing or unpleasant about Kara Burrows, is she safe? On the contrary, it sounds as if someone's concerned for my welfare. Who? Why? Stay calm. Think for a second. Who at Swallowtail knows your name? Diggy? Rihanna? Maybe some other staff members, but no one else. Or, yes, someone else. Two other people. The man and girl from the room I barged into the night I arrived. I told them my name, and the man seemed concerned about me. He asked me if I was in trouble and needed help. Of course, that must be it. It must be him. He's been in the Crystal Grotto some time today, and he wanted to put something in the silver pot just for the sake of doing what you're supposed to do in there. He couldn't think of any big anxiety in his life at the moment. Then he remembered the semi-hysterical woman who'd invaded his hotel room the night before, how close to the edge she'd seemed. In his place, I wouldn't have said safe, but that's a minor quibble. I'd have written, Cara Burrows, is she okay? Perhaps he thought no one could work themselves up into such a state unless they were being pursued by a psychopath. Having thought it through, I feel better. I walk around inside the spa for a while, hoping to catch another glimpse of the detective or the man he was talking to. There's no sign of either of them, so I go back out to the pool. My first swim at Swallowtail is long overdue. I love swimming. At home, I go 3 times a week without fail, while the kids are at school, to a health club that used to be lovely and is now a little shabby around the edges. The spa pool at Swallowtail is a very different proposition. Every aspect of it is perfect, from the temperature and texture of the water to the beautiful blue tiles to the stunning views. Whichever direction you're swimming in, there's something amazing to look at. Above the white walls of the courtyard, you can see beautiful trees, Camelback Mountain, other hills with cacti climbing their sides, purple and grey mountains in the distance. As I swim, I have an idea. I'm going to take some photos on the iPad Mason lent me and post them on Instagram, like I might if I were on a normal holiday, so that Jess and Ollie can see I'm having a good time and there's nothing to worry about. Obviously, I can't take a picture of Camelback Mountain or anything that would identify where I am. I don't trust Patrick not to come out here and try to make me feel guilty, and that would ruin everything. And I can't take pictures of the pool. That would send Jess wild with envy. But there are plenty of other things to photograph. The sun's so strong, I'm dry almost as soon as I get out of the water. I take the iPad and walk around the pool terrace looking for Instagram fodder. A tree in a pot? That'll do nicely. 2 drinks on a table, one green with a grainy texture, and little black bits in it, and one pink. Perfect. Both glasses are full. The couple the drinks belong to are both asleep. Obviously the effect of ordering proved too much for them. I return to my lounge chair, sit down with the iPad, and log into Instagram. I wish I'd thought of a better name for myself. I chose Diskendo79, which is half of my old school motto, Diskendo Discimus, plus my birth year. Jess and Ollie laughed when they saw I'd called myself that. They accused me of being such a nerd. I told them that's exactly what I was at school and proud of it. Nerd in their language means clever person who works hard and cares more about books than about nail varnish or computer games. I was always top of my class at school, got a first at university, was offered the job of my dreams a week after I graduated, did it quite happily until Jess came along, and I decided I wanted to be as wholehearted and focused about starting a family as I'd always been about work. I was happy as a non-working mother and wife. I never looked back, never once regretted my decision. Not until I got pregnant a third time, and everything changed. You're not supposed to be thinking about that now. You're supposed to be posting photos. Neither Ollie nor Jess has left me any kind of message, but, come to think of it, I don't know if it's possible to send private messages on Instagram. I've never done anything on it apart from look at my children's posts. Maybe all you can do is leave comments underneath photos. That makes it even more urgent for me to get my photos up. Once I have, Jess and Ollie can write whatever they want to say to me as comments attached to my pictures. I write stupid captions to go with the images. Pretty tree. And exotic smoothies. How long will I have to wait before one of my children replies? Neither of them has posted anything since I last looked, but I didn't expect them to. It's night time in England. They'll be asleep. I log out of Instagram and into Hotmail. Patrick hasn't opened the email I sent him. It's still showing as an unread message in the inbox of the account we share. He's probably asleep now, too. He and I have always had body clocks in opposition to one another. He bounces out of bed every morning at 5:30 or 6, eager to start the day, but can't keep his eyes open later than 10 in the evening. I feel as if something terrible has happened to me if I have to wake up before 8 a.m., but I can easily stay up till 1 or 2 in the morning if I need to. It worked really well when the kids were little and barely slept. I did the night shifts and Patrick took over at 4 a.m, having gone to bed at 8:30 or 9 the night before, allowing me to sleep till 9 when he had to set off for work.